So after a 50-year prohibition, change is happening, and it's so beautiful to be alive now.
It becomes almost impossible to judge and mistreat people maybe to the same degree.
I'm just trying to be the wholest whole that I can be during this time that I have on this planet. And it allows you then to decide the risks are reasonable enough that I want to move forward, or no, I don't.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Oh Hi Self. I'm your host, Sandra Possing. And if you've been listening to the show for a while, you probably know that I'm a fan of, let's say, digging into topics that are sometimes controversial or alternative, or especially the ones that like make people uncomfortable. You all know that my husband, Chris, and I, we've chosen a pretty unconventional path in many ways. And we're just really super committed to living our lives with authenticity and alignment versus like following the conventional blue blueprint to success. I threw that one out the window a long time ago. On this podcast, we love talking about sex and pleasure and orgasm, vulnerability. We get into manifestation, quantum physics, energy healing, other consciousness expanding ideas. I love normalizing conversations about money and our very fucked up relationships with money. So, you know, like sex, drugs, and rock and roll and other such things. Pretty much anything under the personal development umbrella is fair game here. And on the sex, drugs, and rock and roll note, today, I'm bringing you a guest who is an expert in a field that I'm very interested in personally and excited about just for the possibilities in the collective. And it's definitely a topic that we have not talked about at all yet on the show in the last year and a half. So we're pumped today. And our guest today is, just briefly, a psychedelic medicine advocate and a psychonaut, an author of two best-selling books, and an expert on the impact of psychedelics on mental health. Our guest today is Matt Zeman. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
You are indeed, Sandra.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the show, Matt. So glad to have you.
Sandra, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for doing this. And thanks for bringing this topic to your audience.
Hell yeah. It is, in my mind, very important, but you're going to tell us a lot more about why that actually is. So give us just the parts of your bio that are most important for people to know.
Yeah, I think what's important to people to know is that I was a non-drug user who had an experience that completely changed the way I look and interact with the world. It was such a profound experience. I ended up going back to school to get a master's in psychology and neuroscience focused on mental health and psychedelics. And I started traveling around the country and the world trying different psychedelics by MDs, PhDs, Taitas, shaman. And have gotten to the point where I'm part of an entheogenic community, or that's the fancy word when psychedelics are used for sacred purposes. And I work with medical professionals and how they can incorporate ceremonial best practices into their protocols. So I do both direct experience with the church work and the medical experience. Yeah, and I love it, and I can't imagine not doing what I'm doing at this point.
It sounds like you've found a soul purpose and mission in this work, truly.
I love this. It's every day. It's a practice. It's a journey. It's beautiful.
And really cool from someone in your position to be, I love things that are at the intersection of other things. And for you, it's like you're taking the intersection of like bleeding edge medical interventions and technology and science, but also all of the sacred traditions and indigenous, like many, many, many thousands of years of history, plus just like the modern human getting into altered states of consciousness. But it sounds like you're doing it at an intersection where you're really respecting all of those different important perspectives.
That's exactly what I'm trying to do. I mean, back in the olden days, there was just healers, and the healers were both spiritual healers, and they were the medical healers. And we, in our Western society, we've separated those roles, and pure science belongs to the doctors and spirituality is for the clergy. And it is totally fair to say, well, if we gave psychedelics, which plays in both worlds, just to the spiritual people, well, they don't have the latest knowledge of my brains and bodies to keep me as safe as possible. I get that. And conversely, for the most part, our medical professionals are not trained in spiritual matters. And it's fair to say, well, they can't attend to my spiritual needs. And for those of us who don't want to deal with diagnosis, but we want to deal with mortality, we want to deal with consciousness, we want to deal with who are we, they don't play in that world. So in my opinion, we are headed towards a reconciliation, a reimagination of how these medicines can be accessed here in America. And some people will find it through the medical model, and that's beautiful. And others will find it through a sacred model, and that's beautiful. And still others in a decriminalization model, and that's beautiful. But what's most important is that we agree that these tools are important, that we need access, and we move all of this above ground so we can have reasonable and responsible and transparent conversations among all of us.
Even just reframing, like I'm a huge believer in the power of language and the power of word choice. And so I think it's so helpful to be very intentional about how we articulate things and how we phrase things. And just even just hearing you, you know, so casually and accurately describe these as medicine and tools and interventions and whatever else we want to use it versus drugs. You know, it's like those older school, older paradigm words have so many connotations that are just not accurate and that are too, like, you know, carries all this other history and politicization and stuff with it. So I love even just thinking about it as sacred medicine and like healing tools that we can employ. So cool.
I appreciate that. It is funny, in our culture, we talk about we're looking for cures. We're looking for things that numb, things that are instant. And I talk about with psychedelics all the time. These aren't cures for anything. These are catalysts. They help us awaken. They help raise our awareness. They help us feel. And from those moments with the medicine, we then can start the work. And that's where working with people like you, with coaches or with therapists who can help us. Okay, I've had this insight. What do I do with this? How do I actualize this? How do I make something? How do I not forget what I saw? And the work, though, is after the integration process.
So I would love to hear a little bit more about your backstory in general, and then specifically the experience that you had that turned you over to the, not the dark side, but the bright side.
I was just an entrepreneur. I built businesses. I had I've been married a long time. I have two beautiful children. And life was fine. It was fine. By all measures, it was fine. I was more controlling. I didn't drink a lot because I didn't like getting out of control. I didn't do drugs. I didn't like getting out of control. And some friends invited me. They had hired a guide to do a magic mushroom journey. And they said, "You want to come?" I was like, "I don't think so." And they, "No, you do. You do. You love to travel. And this is like the biggest trip you've ever taken. And you love to learn. And here's a chance to learn about yourself in a really unique way." And they got me with that. So I was like, okay, that sounds good. But I went with super low expectations. I expected kind of like a Beatles experience with visuals and just, I don't know, not a lot. I thought the substantive ones are for other people. But in that very first experience, I reconnected with my mom, who died when I was 22. She was 49. And I could feel her next to me. And I could feel her, like I could pull a string from her to me to my kids. I'm like, oh my God. She is here in just this different form, and I'm carrying her forward, and my kids are carrying us forward. And it was so beautiful. And I felt this incredible sense of safety and love, and then realized in the next instant that I didn't feel safe and loved in my everyday life. And why not? What's going on? And I had kind of insight after insight after insight, all like in 6 hours, 5 hours. And I left that saying, what the hell was that? And how do I make sense of this? And I realized I don't know how to read a scientific paper. It's been 30 years since a science class, and I don't know. I don't understand. So my geeky side took me to science first so that I could understand the literature. And then my lived experience brought me over to the, okay, well, for me, it's not about I have X amount of depression or Y amount of anxiety, or I have a diagnosis that I'm trying to do something with. I'm just trying to be the wholest whole that I can be during this time that I have on this planet. And that's, for me, is the sacred use of psychedelics, which we have been doing for thousands and thousands of years.
For a little bit of context for anyone, I think probably a lot of my listeners are at least somewhat familiar with psychedelics, either peripherally or through their own, perhaps at least just recreational experience. But let's say for any listener who is like brand new to this stuff, has never experienced any of it, doesn't really know what we're talking about. Little mini history lesson here. Question number one, which substances are we specifically referring to when we talk about psychedelics?
Now, when I think about psychedelics, we can talk about kind of the classic psychedelics, things like LSD, psilocybin, which is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms. We could talk about iboga or ibogaine from the iboga root. We can talk about synthetic psychedelics, things like MDMA, which we might have known as Molly as kids, but that's used as an empathogen, a heart opener in the psychedelic space. MDA, otherwise known as sassafras, is in that space. People might have heard of DMT or 5-MeO-DMT, which is also known as bufo, which is the venom of the bufo alvarius toad, another type of psychedelic. And then we get into kind of the things that are classified as or categorized as a psychedelic, but really aren't. So ketamine, as an example, the only legal psychedelic in all 50 states, is technically not a psychedelic. It's a dissociative anesthetic, but it's close enough in terms of what it does that we call it a psychedelic. But there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of psychedelics that are out there. There are two books, Pical and Tikal, which you could read if you want to read about some of these psychedelics. But that's typically what we're talking about with psychedelics.
We put ayahuasca under that umbrella as well.
I would. Sorry about that. And of course, ayahuasca. It's a beautiful. And actually, peyote would fall under this category. All of the mescaline, San Pedro, would fall under that category. There's plenty that I did not name.
Okay, so that's super helpful. So now we have the context of which substances are kind of the main classic ones we're talking about. And then I always find this part so fascinating. Maybe just a little history lesson about how, because we were sort of, as at least in the US, we were sort of on the right track with research back in the day. And then we took a hard stop when politics got involved. And then there was like a freeze period. And then now we're kind of getting back into the light of day. Can you tell us a little bit about just like what went down? And
I mean, all the way through the 60s, there was a lot, thousands of papers on psychedelics and the efficacy for lots of things, from substance use to couples counseling and everything in between. And in the Nixon administration had two challenges. There was an anti-war movement and there was a civil rights movement. And they decided very consciously that if they were to criminalize drugs, that they could infiltrate those groups and arrest some of those leaders. And one of the Nixon lawyers said, did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did. But the Controlled Substances Act passed in 1970. It outlawed most of these psychedelics. Our Controlled Substances Act spread around the world, infiltrating policy across the world. Fast forward to 1986, and we get into mandatory sentencing laws, and when we see this massive spike of incarceration, and as you would imagine, the impact on Black and Brown communities is radically different than the impact on white. All the research says we all do drugs at about the same percentage, but for some reason, Black and Brown people go to jail a lot more often than people who are not. But come today, we have over 300 academic institutions researching psychedelics across the world. You've probably heard about MDMA getting breakthrough therapy designation by the FDA and a phase 3 clinical trial being completed, and psilocybin getting breakthrough therapy designation, and different churches. We had a church last night, the first church in America to get an exemption without having to go to trial, just happened yesterday. So things are happening that's going to lead to more access and another option for all of us. So after a 50-year prohibition, change is happening. And it's so beautiful to be alive now and being able to witness this and be a part of this conversation.
It's certainly an exciting time to be alive, just thinking about the possibilities of what we might be able to accomplish in especially mental health care, and like both mental health care for current challenges, but also even like preventative mental health care, and like with things like MDMA and heart opening and helping people access their emotions earlier in life and with partners and with other humans versus, you know, realizing too late that they never were able to process emotions and then have created all sorts of disease as a result. I think it's such an exciting time. And I'm certainly not one who spends much time on regret, but I am curious, where do you think we would be now if we had not had that 50-year prohibition?
I don't know. It's such an interesting question, Sandra, because we've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of the church and the state trying to squash these medicines. So while we had a very real 50-year prohibition in this country, the use of psychedelics has been pushed underground for a long, long time. What I think is interesting in this age of information, in this age where we have there's so much abundance in this world. I mean, there's never been a better time to be alive, where all of the metrics on violence against people and again food scarcity and on housing, all of the metrics are incredible. So we have this unique opportunity where abundance is happening in the world. We have access to information, and we are able to take the time to explore who are we? How do we want to be addressed? How do we want to treat our fellow humans? And these tools are coming back into our awareness, which I think is going to help all of this and help us remember who we are, remember who we where we came from, and take us into this next shift of humanity that is abundance-based versus scarcity-based.
I feel a lot of hope when I think about all of these things too, like very much in my own experience, but then also from everything I've sort of heard from anyone who's shared their experience too, the sense of, I guess you could call it like oneness or connectedness that you like almost, obviously everyone's experience is different, but that you almost inevitably experience with some sort of a psychedelic journey. It's almost like once you've gone there, you can't go back to the level of isolation or loneliness or aloneness that, you know, we can so easily experience as a human living in the modern world, especially like so many people during the pandemic were, you know, stuck at home alone and just the way that people are stuck behind computers and not connected to community and all of that now. And it's like, once you have a psychedelic experience and feel that sense of not just, you know, whether it's a connection to the divine or a higher power of some kind, or just nature or yourself as like, you're experiencing yourself as one with the universe or seeing another human, even one that maybe you don't particularly like, or one that you literally disagree with every single thing that comes out of their mouth, but it's like you can see them as a human and that we're all part of this collective. And it's just like it becomes almost impossible to judge and mistreat people maybe to the same degree that it would be when we have that sense of separation and better than or less than or like us against them. And I mean, I think about probably my most profound personal experience was down at a ayahuasca medicine retreat, basically in Costa Rica for a week. And kind of the running joke there was, I don't know who said it or if it was just something that was passed around, but everyone was kind of saying like, no one should be allowed to be a powerful politician without having done at least 7 plant medicine ceremonies, you know, because they would not be capable of so many of the atrocities that so many world leaders are, you know, regularly committing. And, but then again, you know, to get that into the mainstream was a whole nother conversation. But I'm like, when I think about the possibilities, not just for ordinary people, but also of people who have that kind of power and influence, like I get excited about this stuff becoming more mainstream so that the people who are really like shepherding the direction of the world as a whole could be coming from such a different perspective that's much more grounded in connectedness.
So many things are coming up for me. Part of what's coming up is we have a model. I mean, the Greeks for 2000 years had a ceremony where people would go up and have a psychedelic experience and then go on to be part of society. And people like Plato and Aristotle and Marcus Aurelius and all of these different contributors had this type of experience and was able to shape what was a very culturally rich culture. The other thing that's coming up that's incredible, and as much dysfunction as we see in our government today, one thing that appears to have kind of bipartisan universal support is psychedelics. I mean, we're seeing it in how quickly MDMA has kind of moving through the process in this last bit of the process with bipartisan support. And in this case, it's to help people with treatment-resistant post-traumatic stress disorder. We're seeing bipartisan support for psilocybin for end of life. We're seeing bipartisan support for psychedelics, for substance use challenges, psychedelics for eating disorders, psychedelics for autism, some beautiful work being done with the University of Toronto and Imperial College London. Incredible work. It's incredible that we are seeing politicians supporting. And it seems to me, of course, we're going to see them getting involved in using them themselves. Tim Ferriss talks about he doesn't know any billionaires who don't do psychedelics. So we're seeing people edging into this again. And with that comes all of the questions around how do we do this responsibly and how do we do this with intention and attention and keep people as safe as possible with these very special medicines that aren't like anything else in our toolbox.
Amen to all of that. That makes me even more hopeful and more excited that to hear from, you know, someone who really has their finger on the pulse to know that things are happening and accelerating. And a lot of people in those positions who can have influence in a greater way are leaning towards it with a lot of optimism and openness.
Can we stick on this for one more second? Because there is another class of person that I think that these use of these medicines are going to be important. And that's our medical professionals. So in our society today, our doctors kind of act as our high priests. We all are trained very early to turn our agency over to them, and what they say goes, and then they carry a lot of weight, and 9 out of 10 doctors believe this, and oh, well, then I should believe this. And we're in, and I believe we're moving through, a culture right now of overpilling. We prescribe antidepressants and mood stabilizers and anti-anxiety and all sorts of medicines to more and more people at a younger age with really no hope of getting them off of those medicines, because that's not how our health system is built. We can give the initial prescription, but we don't really have the time to wean them off. And we are taking these medicines that are episodically designed and putting people on them for decades, and all the side effects go with them. And again, and I'm not pill shaming, if any of these medicines work for you, that's amazing. But if it doesn't work for you, not you failing the medicine failing you, and it only works maybe 40% of the population, maybe. And with weight gain, lethargy, sexual dysfunction, suicidal ideation, all sorts of things. So what I'm seeing in ceremonial psychedelics is doctors stepping in and therapists stepping in and having these experiences where maybe it shifts how they talk to their patients. Maybe it shifts how they care for their patients. Maybe they talk to the children they're prescribing prescriptions to and say, okay, we're going to do this for a little while, but there's nothing wrong with you. We're trying to give you some tools to stabilize you now so that you can get through this period of school. And then you're going to come off of these. And you need to know you're going to come off of these because there's nothing wrong with you. We just need to get you through this period. And I'm hoping that the medical professionals evolve using these same tools, and we see a shift in the language that is given to our children and to our partners and to us as we're being prescribed these medicines that are also used for these mental health reasons.
As you're describing that, I just got this, it almost makes me emotional, like a very clear image of kind of like our future doctor. I don't know how far in the future this would be, but hopefully not too far. But it's like, it's modern Western medicine doctor, but with a lot of ancient Eastern philosophy mixed in and all of the beautiful parts of like traditional healer and shaman, but baked into, you know, somebody with all the technology and the tools and all the most recent scientific breakthrough, but all of the reverence for like the sacredness and the power and the potency of these kinds of medicines. And like, it's like taking, you know, here we are, my husband's a health coach. We're both fitness freaks, and we, you know, try to be really big advocates for our health. And we have Kaiser, which is, it's like, you know, it's one of those dog shows where they jump through like it's like trying to do something super simple through Kaiser is like going through the most complicated maze just to get one thing done, you know? So I'm like, it is what it is now. But if I think of this future version, it's like maybe the stepping stone is we get more functional medicine doctors who at least are looking at the whole picture versus like, you know, traditional modern Western medicine. They have like 7.5 minutes per patient, and it's like diagnose it, assign, you know, prescribe something, and then move on to the next one. So it's like maybe the next one is functional or integrative medicine. And then in this future, it's this like shaman doctor that has the whole picture and like is able to spend time with each patient and, you know, understand where they're coming from and their background and their history, and not just like, what are your symptoms, but what is your trauma and what is your current support system? Do you have family and friends? You know, like if I put you on this strong painkiller, are you going to be able to come off of it because you have emotional and mental support, or are you going to get addicted to it because it's literally the only thing that's making you feel good in your life post surgery? But also, so it's like, yeah, it gets me very excited, and I'm such an optimist. I tend to lean toward the possibilities, but the picture that you're painting is an exciting one.
I appreciate that. I think a lot about that. The divide between the medical professionals who believe that this is just a biochemical reaction. There are ketamine clinics across the country where you can go and they're going to give you an IV and they're going to take your vitals and they're going to send you on your way. And there's other doctors who believe it's a biochemical, psychosocial, spiritual process. And in those, using ketamine again as an example, they're going to work on what's your intention, what's your preparation. They're going to put you in a living room, a very cozy environment. They might ritualize even the giving of the ketamine. They're going to then work with you afterwards on how do you unpack this? What did you see? What do you want to do? They're going to talk with you about what is your support structure? What does your house look like? What are you going to do for, how much exercise do you get? How much water do you drink? How much sleep do you get? They're going to look at all of it. And both are legal, and not everybody responds as well for the biochemical, psychosocial, spiritual, but enough of us do. And I think we're pushing in that direction. And there is a new generation, I believe, of doctors who want that type of experience and type of relationship with their patients. You know, I'm going to bring up one more thing that you talked about the Eastern, and I do think there's so much wisdom in the Eastern traditions, and whether that's Hinduism or Buddhism, lots of wisdom there. And one of the things that I'm very conscious of these days is there's a lot, is how much wisdom is in the Judeo-Christian traditions that is really not that different. So again, let's forget for a moment, for just the purpose of this discussion, let's not talk about Jesus as a Messiah, but let's talk about him as a prophet. Let's talk about him as a yogi. Okay. What was he teaching? He was teaching have love for God. Okay. Well, and these different traditions, God can be inside of you. And certainly there's lots of Christian texts where that is. And love your neighbor as yourself. Mm. Okay. That doesn't sound that far off. So if we take away the weaponization of the religion and the rules of the religion, we go to the teachings. Those of us with a Jewish background, with a Christian background, with an Islamic background, with a Hindu background, we can all find great comfort in our wisdoms, in our heritage, and use these tools to get closer to our traditions, and get closer to our families and get closer to our communities.
100%. Just, it's like pulling on what is the essence of all of these teachings. And you set aside, like you said, the weaponization and some of the really fucked up historical political mm-hmm. parts of it. And it's like, they're all beautiful and they're all strikingly similar in terms of the essence and the energy at the root of them. Yeah, I love that. A couple kind of quick fire questions here. What are the general guidelines in your mind about who are psychedelics for and who are they not for, in terms of, like, I remember with ayahuasca, the retreat I went to was very, very conscientious about medical intake. And there were very specific contraindications. The ones I remember were schizophrenia and a couple of other more serious mental health things where it's like, this experience could trigger something that goes in the wrong direction. And I assume that it varies based on the substance. And then mm-hmm. I know that a lot of it totally depends on set and settings over, you know, somebody who's just trying to escape a life that they hate, doing it by themselves on their couch with zero integration, obviously not ideal, versus somebody who's going into a sacred ceremony with a guide, with integration and all of the thoughtful set and setting, like that's a thing. But are there some kind of blanket guidelines for this person? Yes, this person, absolutely not.
So my book is, one of the books is Psychedelics for Everyone. And I don't mean that everyone should take a psychedelic, but I do believe they're good for society. So, mm-hmm. so when we talk about who should or should not take a psychedelic, I mean, schizophrenia is one of the red flags. It just doesn't work. You really need to have a firm grasp of this reality before going into a non-ordinary state of consciousness. Others are not as clear. So I'll use bipolar as an example. There's not a lot of research with bipolar populations and psychedelics. So it's challenging if you are bipolar. And there are lots of citizen scientists out there who are bipolar and are using psychedelics. The general rule of thumb using that population is not when you're in a manic state. Mm-hmm. And again, be well resourced as you, if that's something you choose to do. The research, for the most part, has really kept anyone who's one degree of separation away. So if you have a close family member who's schizophrenic, a close family member who's bipolar, there's not as much research out there. So it's again something for you to be aware of if you're considering using this medicine. There are a number of prescriptions that don't work with certain psychedelics. So for instance, if you are on an antidepressant, an SSRI is an example, and would like to do ayahuasca, that could be fatal. Certain medicines with MDMA can be fatal. So it's super important that whoever you're working with, whether it's in the medical model, the spiritual model, the psychedelic tourism model, you're flying off to do a retreat somewhere, or in the decrim, that you have a health intake. One recommendation I give people all the time is to go to spiritpharmacist.com, Dr. Ben Malcolm. He is a PharmD. He's a specialist in psychedelic pharmacology, and he's not selling you anything. He's not selling you a ketamine package. He's not selling you a retreat in Costa Rica. He's not selling you a church service. He's just going to do your health intake and have a conversation with you about what psychedelics might be less risky for you, given your background, your prescriptions, your supplements, your age, your weight, your family history. And I think whether that's him or whether it's someone from the Psychedelic Pharmacist Association or whether it's your own personal doctor, if they have the knowledge, getting that information from a third party gives you an objective source And it allows you then to decide, okay, the risks are reasonable enough that I want to move forward, or no, I don't. But I think that mindset going in and saying, I'm taking control of all of this, I think puts the power back where it should be, which is in us as consumers and us as the people who are caretakers of these bodies and souls that we have.
Can you say that website one more time? I want to make sure we put it in the show.
Spiritpharmacist.com would be a great one to start with.
Awesome. So helpful to have those kinds of resources, mm-hmm. like you said, regardless of which model you're from, a spiritual or from a medical model or whatever it is. But even just, you know, the way that all of these medicines have been used kind of underground too, it's like you have perhaps less guidance in those settings. So I think for just the opportunity for individuals to take really radical responsibility for their own experience and to have access, like, you know, safety mm-hmm. first with all of this, and the more education and information we have, the better. Speaking of education and information, it makes me think of, again, just like as a child of the 80s, growing up with so much like relentless media propaganda and like, this is your brain, this is your brain on drugs, just say no, all of that. What do you say to, because I imagine you have conversations with skeptics and critics and naysayers who are very stuck in the paradigm of all drugs are bad. What do you say to them? Like, just, you know, the older generations or people who, for whatever reason, or maybe religious beliefs or their grandma convinced them, like, mm-hmm. how do you approach those conversations?
It's lovely to have those conversations, because it's by even having the conversation, that means we're open for the discussion. So I think all conversations in this area are good. I approach it in a number of different ways. One is, we can have a reasonable and rational discussion on drugs. What is a drug? How do we feel about coffee as a drug, as a psychoactive tool? Okay. How do we feel about Oxycontin? How do we feel about antidepressants and alcohol and tobacco? I love talking about, there's a study by Dr. David Nutt from Imperial College of London, where he said, let's forget about how drugs are classified, what's legal and illegal. Forget it. Let's just look at harm to self and harm to others. And let's stack them up. On the far end of his chart, the most dangerous drug for self and others is alcohol. It's like a 73. And you move down and you find heroin and crack and tobacco. You go all the way down his chart, and a 6 is mushrooms, and a 7 is LSD, and a 9 is MDMA. So are all these drugs dangerous? Absolutely. All drugs can be dangerous. They have risks, of course. But when we talk about relative risk, acetaminophen has a couple hundred people die every year in America. Yeah. So when we talk about relative risk, it might change people's perceptions, which then gets us into, what does the research say for how we can keep ourselves as safe as possible? And it says there's three things to pay attention to: source, set, and setting. So source is, are your drugs pure? If you're doing a medical model, probably came from a pharmacy, so you're safe. Great. If you're working in the underground space, are you working with someone who does this all the time? Are you working with someone who just bought their first batch off of Instagram? So finding out, where does their medicine come from? Do they test it? Those are good questions to ask. Your set is your mindset. So the mindset starts with, do you want to do this really? Great. Do you know what you're taking? Do you know how long you're going to be under the influence? Do you know what it's potentially going to make you feel like? Are you prepared in terms of your intention? All those things. Have you done an informed consent where someone's talked you through these things? That's all part of your mindset. And then setting is the physical environment. Do you have control? There's no neighbors and dogs and spouses and Amazon deliveries. And are they going to play music or not play music? And are there rules of engagement? And so if you're in a group ceremony, are people allowed to talk? Are they not allowed to talk? Is the person leading going to talk to you, or are they going to leave you be? What is all that is the setting. If those three things are, if you're intentional about those things and give attention to those three things, the probability of a bad trip, a truly bad trip, is very, very, very low.
So huge. That's really helpful. I love that. When you think about where the industry as a whole, or the space, or the research is going, I imagine it's all moving very quickly. So in the next few years, over 5-10 years, what do you see?
I see three things happening. I see the medical model continuing to expand as research continues to prove that these tools, these psychedelics, can help with anything related to repetitive thinking patterns. So for some people, that might manifest as a substance use challenge, others as depression, others as anxiety, others as a gambling addiction, others as overeating, others as undereating. Anything that can break those patterns and help people remember who they are. I think that's beautiful. And we're going to see a lot of things in the medical model. I think Rick Doblin from MAPS talks about, 3,000 psychedelic centers in America is his vision. Any city big enough to have a hospice center should have a psychedelic center. Great. I love that. That's the medical model. And academia, I think, is going to continue to support what the medical is doing. Fantastic. I think we're also going to see a decriminalization happening. So we've seen some of that in Colorado and some of that in cities across the country, where people like Decrim Nature are going around and saying, no adult should tell another adult that they can't put nature in their body. Okay. And some at the local level, they're saying, we agree. And they're decriminalizing some of these medicines. In addition to the recreational purpose, why is this so important? That medical model is expensive. And for the most part, it's cash pay. So for upper middle class people, that's amazing. We can have access. We can go buy a $5,000 ketamine package and do our 6 treatments. For those who don't have that kind of money, that's hard. And maybe they want to grow their own psilocybin, which costs very, very little, or grow their own mescaline, or there's other options here. So decriminalizing these helps create access. So I think we're going to see more and more cities and states decriminalizing psychedelics for access. And then right now there's 200 to 2,000 psychedelic churches in America. We don't know the number. It's in that zone. And these are people who, there's just like anything, there's a range of provider. There's some that are more scrupulous than others. But for at its core, these are people who believe that this tool connects them with their sacred unlike anything else that they know. Mm-hmm. And it's important for their practice. And in a country founded on religious freedom, and most of our states have that protection in it as well, they just want to practice connecting with their sacred in peace. And I believe we're going to see the government find a way to negotiate treaties with these churches, to give them exemptions and allow this to happen, so that then we as citizens of this country can go to whichever model we want to go to that resonates with us. And if I want to have a doctor experience in a white coat, great. And if I want someone with a rattle and a feather, great. And everything in between. I think academia just continues to back up what both the sacred and the medical knows already.
Are most of the churches, my guess would be that they're mostly ayahuasca and psilocybin based, or are there others?
Yeah, it's a range. So there's a lot of ayahuasca churches. There's a lot of psilocybin churches, but like I'm involved with a multi-sacrament church where we do on day one, typically a heart opener, and that can be MDMA or MDA, depending on let me just say about the retreat we just had in Mexico, where we did day one was MDA. So you feel love for yourself and others. It turns off shame, blame, and guilt. You have this incredible practice of surrendering and breathing and getting into the medicine. Day two was psilocybin. So now it's that interconnectedness of all things. And you feel, oh, wow, you remember, I'm not separate and apart from nature. I am nature. And we are all truly, we might look like different waves, but we're part of the same ocean. And I get that. And I can see how we're all connected. Okay. And I can remember that if at my core I am love and I'm worthy and I'm enough, then what are all these stories I'm telling myself? And more importantly, what are the behaviors that I'm doing that takes me away from who I am? So I love that medicine for that. And then after that, we do Bufo. So in Bufo, you have this non-duality experience. You have 10 to 20 minutes of just turning into energy and connecting with source. And again, I know if you're listening to this and this is not your vocabulary, that's okay. And if you are curious about this, yeah, it's amazing. It's something I had no idea. I didn't believe in God until my first psychedelic experience. And now I'm getting a doctorate of ministry. It's been such a radical shift in perception. But that's a third medicine that we use for a very specific purpose in certain types of ceremonies. And at some point, I believe our government will allow us to do this very publicly here in the United States, and where we're all using, again, the best research, the best knowledge, the best risk reduction, and because it's transparent, it's above ground, everybody's safer.
Just coming at it with so much integrity and thoughtfulness and responsibility. You have 2 books. What are they about, and who should read them?
Yeah, the first one, Psychedelics for Everyone. And that one is a collector. It's really, I edited this book more than I wrote it. I wrote a bunch of the stories in the beginning. I've written a couple of the chapters, but then I brought in people to talk about psychedelics as a whole, and then different people to bring in specific knowledge and different psychedelics specifically. And then I had the whole thing reviewed by different medical professionals for accuracy. And I did it in a way that is accessible to people who don't have a science background. So if you're just looking for a broad overview of all things psychedelics, Psychedelics for Everyone, I think is a good place to start. The second book is more of a workbook, which is, okay, you've already found your way to the medicine, and it can be, again, legal ketamine, or it could be underground, it could be tourism. This is a preparation and integration workbook where it helps you set your intentions and a bunch of activities up front. And then it takes you through 4 weeks of activities following your psychedelic experience with a gratitude journal and different things at the end of it. So that's called Beyond the Trip. Both of those are available anywhere that books are sold. Coming out August 1st is The Veteran's Guide to Psychedelics, which I'm doing as a collaboration with Heroic Hearts Project. 100% of the proceeds are going to go to them, and they take veterans into Central and South America, primarily with ayahuasca, but they're also now working in Oregon using psilocybin. And they give them these powerful experiences to help take away the PTSD. And the book will be specific to veterans. And then there's actually a coach's guide or a therapist guide that works with it. So if you're working with a veteran, they can have the workbook, you can have the guide, and they work hand in hand. So I'm very excited about having that come out in August with 100% of the proceeds going to Heroic Hearts Project.
So cool. I imagine that veterans specifically being a demographic that could benefit more than most from this type of work.
I think veterans, first responders, victims of sexual assault, the existing pharmacological solutions and talk therapies are not proving to be effective enough. We've had 30,000 veterans take their own lives since 9/11. Oh, that's more than 4 times the amount of people who died in all of combat since 9/11. So just taking veterans, this is, yeah, it's too much, and we need a different solution.
Any other favorite resources you have in terms of books or websites that somebody who is interested and wants to go down these rabbit holes?
Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind.
I was going to ask you about that, yeah.
I love Carl Hart's, Dr. Carl Hart from Columbia University. He has a book, Drug Use for Grownups. It's great, fantastic. And he talks about kind of the African-American experience as it relates to drugs, but he's been an addiction specialist and a professor up at Columbia for over 20 years. Fascinating book. On the movie side, for those who like, okay, I want to have a conversation with my parents, with my partners, How to Change Your Mind. There's a 4-part Netflix series. It's so accessible. And it's just like, let's just put this on for an hour. And then that leads to lots of good conversations. Mm-hmm. And then the other one that's fantastic, Fungi. It's time-lapse photography. Louis Schwartzberg is the director. Paul Stamets is featured prominently in it. And just fantastic, easy, accessible, and just lots of fun conversations after that film.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm really big on giving our listeners lots of practical tools and then resources they can go check out if any of this resonates. What about for you personally? So now we know where you think the industry is going. What's next for you personally? So you've got this new book coming out in August. What else are you excited about?
I love the that we're growing as a community and having more and more of these beautiful ceremonies. I'm pursuing a doctorate of ministry at this point, which is so much fun, and doing amazing reading and thinking and talking with different traditions and just learning about spirituality in a way that I was never curious even about it. And I'm loving that and trying to really understand my lineage. And I'll just give one cool example. So when I've thought about psychedelics before this, I really thought of it in terms of indigenous people, like, oh, the Native Americans used peyote and the Central and South America used ayahuasca. I didn't think about like the African use of psychedelics. And we have a cave drawing in Algeria. It's somewhere between 4,000 and 9,000 years old of like a mushroom shaman. We have tribes that used iboga throughout Africa. I didn't know about the Siberian shaman and their use of psilocybin. I didn't think about the witches that were burned all throughout Europe being burned because of their use of plant medicine. Certainly we've talked about Central, South, and North America, but my point, one big revelation has just been that we all of us have a psychedelic lineage. The use of soma in India is just one more example. It's kind of amazing. And I didn't think about that for myself. And I'm loving learning more about that and being able to just remind people gently that, yeah, the fact that it's been underground doesn't mean it wasn't happening. And the fact that you didn't know about it doesn't mean it's not yours to partake in.
There are so many possibilities when it comes to expanding our consciousness, and we have many tools and medicines available. And I really hope that by normalizing conversations about all of these topics, we can just get the tools, get the medicine into the hands of more people, but done in, like everything you said, just done with integrity, with responsibility, with safety, with education. And who knows what becomes possible for us as a species.
For the children that we're bringing into this world, yeah. Sandra.
Yes, exactly. So we want to know, well, so we'll link to all the things we've linked to. What are the best places for people to hunt you down on the internet?
Oh, I love when people connect with me on Instagram and on LinkedIn. I'm active on both those platforms. My site, mattzeman.com, I have kind of a free guide to microdosing for those that are interested in that. I have lots of videos and I put content up there all the time. Yeah. And then if they're looking for, I speak a lot of different events and I love doing that. So if you're, again, reach out to me on any of those platforms and we can talk about that as well.
Awesome. Well, hopefully the listeners have walked away with some great nuggets here. And if nothing else, lots of inspiration the way I'm walking away with just so much hope for the future. I really appreciate you sharing your time and experience and wisdom and expertise with us. And I really appreciate the work that you do. Again, you are the work you're doing to me is some of the most important out there, as I feel like healing and expanding our collective consciousness is one of the most important agenda items we have together right now. So thanks so much for your contributions there.
I really appreciate it. This is a co-creation, the work you're doing in the coaching world and helping people look at their whole selves and think about all the tools that are available to them. This is a co-creation. So we're having this conversation for a reason. I appreciate it.
I love it. Well, thank you for your time. And listeners, as always, thank you for tuning in. Hopefully this episode brings you back home a little bit closer to yourself, as the title of this podcast is Oh Hi Self. If you enjoyed this episode, maybe take a screenshot, throw it up on your favorite social media, tag us. We always love it if you rate and review the show. And thank you, as always. I love you, and we'll see you in the next episode.